childhood torment, as if this were a field trip. Once I might have been angry.
I'll come, grumbled Fika, if your next performance isn't shit, Brilla.
I looked at the two of them. Two people, Oliver, who are content to follow me into the dark. Fika's cheeks twitching despite her fixed scowl, Owen's eyes wide but determined. I made my way to the stage, pushed past the quiet crowd of regulars, climbed into the spotlight, adjusted the microphone. Finally, I peeled off my goggles. Perhaps someone gasped. Perhaps the bartender dropped a glass. But I was not listening for it. Such a hullabaloo was coming from the table in the corner. Such a large amount of whooping and foot stamping and table pounding. It ricocheted off all the walls of the canaipa and shook my very soul. Lentz met us at the train station, standing on the platform, looming over Fika's shoulder. He cracked his knuckles as Owen and I approached. Fika showed her teeth and squeezed his forearm. I passed him by the good old bridge this morning. He offered to help me. I could see evidence that he had changed, at least physically, a dent at the back of his head. A dent I put there.
Hello, he murmured.
Fika grinned like a proud mother. He nodded and set down her satchel and left us. As he turned, I remembered once more the day I'd first seen him, the day the sight of me had set him to screaming. Perhaps he'll head off and hurt someone again. Perhaps he thinks the same thing when he looks at me. For all I knew, there was a dead mouse in his pocket. But I hope not. Freiburg was once a small village, but with the excavation of its ore mines over the centuries, it grew to prominence. Now Freiburg is home to a technical university. It attracts additional tourists because of the ruins of Freudenstein Castle. There are old crumbling walls scattered here and there among the townhouses and shops. Scraps of an old world displaced in time. You live in America, where things are still new. In Germany, the old and the new exist side by side. The area surrounding Freiburg is said to be green and scenic due to its proximity to Tarrant Forest, an ancient sprawl of trees and sandstone caves. The forest is listed among the most beautiful places in Saxony. We did not enter the national park there, but rather we climbed a fence along the lines of the forest. Owen led us through those aging woods. The air was cool beneath the canopy. Thick moss drooped from the trees, sweet-smelling, peculiar in its familiarity. Had I smelled this from the car seat where I drowsed, while my mother drove me in dizzying silence to the laboratory? We hit a dirt road somewhere amid the trees. I imagined we might have stumbled onto your driveway. Wish as I might, heart swelling as my companion stopped so that I might catch my breath. At the end of the driveway was no triangular cabin. Hidden in the sandstone cliffs was the entrance to an underground car park. It was dark within. I asked the others to hold on to me. We formed a human chain, and I led them through the damp garage. They held their phones aloft for additional light. Grass had invaded even here, and the entire lot was empty. Devoid of machinery, of any sign that once the place was the source of so much strangeness and pain. We approached closed automatic doors. I hesitated. Fika stepped forward and kicked in the glass with her boots, as if she did such things on a frequent basis. Of course she does, Ollie. I stopped in the familiar reception area. No lights buzzed inside. The wallpaper was curling with water damage. Everything smelled cold. We could all sense it. the entire facility was vacant. Ghost town, said Fika. We wandered the halls that used to house me, calling to what I used to be, and hearing no reply. All the medical equipment was gone. Posters had been torn down. There was nothing, not even paper litter. Just dampness and silence and empty counters. Even the clipboards were absent from the walls. Even the magazines were absent from their tables. I half expected to see anxious women sitting in the waiting rooms after all this time. Yeah, I can't believe you used to live here, said Fika, stopping outside the cafeteria across from the stairwell. It explains why you're such a mopey bastard. The fire was gone from her voice. Everything sounded hollow in that hallway. I have been trying to smile more. Fika let out a nervous bark of a laugh. As if that isn't the saddest part of all. I cannot see darkness, but I could feel it gathering down those steps as I pushed open the door to the stairwell. The air was icier, smelled fouler. I took a deep breath and a step forward. Owen grabbed my arm. He shook his head and began to tap a message to me. I put my hand on his fingers to stop him. I'll return before you can even ponder missing me. He released my arm, finger by finger. Despite his silence, I knew all that he was saying and was stronger for it. I descended alone. The door to the anechoic chamber remained open. It remained a gaping vault of blackness. I forced myself forward and fell to my hands and knees. I crawled into the soundless void. I could feel my heartbeat, could feel the grate beneath my fingers as I listened. I shouted once, just to be certain. The foam pallets had molded enough that the room was not so silent as I recalled. It was not so good at swallowing everything up. She was not there, Ollie. I put a hand over my mouth and breathed through my nose, again and again. If I made any sound after that, the walls halfway absorbed it. Upstairs, Owen and Fika waited on benches in the cafeteria. Owen met me when I pushed the doors open. For once, Fika did not speak. It's all gone. The sound of my voice echoed in the halls. Halls that used to house me. There's no one. Nothing's here. Fika sighed. So what are we meant to do now? Though no one could see me do it, I smiled. Anything we fluffing want, I said. Frau Pruitt showed up on my doorstep to deliver the results of my transfer assessment. She came into the kitchen and nearly smiled when Father gave her a coffee. I could hear the creases in her face protesting the unfamiliarity. My father smiled too. Oliver, romance might not be impossible for all of us. You passed, she said. Not a big fuss. Here is a list of potential schools you may consider transferring to. Not a big fuss, but worth hiking up 5 flights of stairs to inform me. She sniffed. Father grabbed my hand. I'm proud, Moritz. He didn't have to say it aloud. I felt it in his posture. But he's trying to speak more. We both are. You should also start considering universities. You're behind, Mr. Farber. I'll leave that until I get back. What do you mean, until you get back? After gymnasium, I'm going to take advantage of the grace year. Postpone pursuing higher academia. Travel. It is traditional for German students to spend 1 year abroad before beginning university. A year to see the world or work and discover what it is they would like to do with their lives.
Frau Pruitt clearly wanted to throw a book at me.
Let me tell you something, Moritz. Going out looking for the woman who left you won't make any of us happier. You found a good father here in Herr Farber.
And he has a son in me, I said, and he understands me well enough to know I'm serious. I smiled. I'm not looking for her. But if I meet my mother in my travels, well, I suppose I can finally accuse her of being the one who pooped.
Even father looked shocked. How uncouth you've made me, Ollie.
One day, I will meet you. I will meet you, and neither of us will die for it. By then, you'll have seen more than enough humidifiers to sicken you. In 1 year, I hope to be where you are, Oliver Paolo. I am saving pennies. In the meantime, the handful of friends you've helped me gather will be enough to deal with. Perhaps I'll surprise you even sooner. Perhaps I am in your driveway, not far from where you sit folding origami dragons, tapping your fingers against the bones of your Glock, painting electricity. Perhaps I am already at your door, arms and weak heart open. Here is a children's rhyme you already know. Ready or not, here I come. All my love, Moritz Farber.
Chapter 34. The Doorway. The funny thing about character arcs, Moritz, is how you can decide to see them in almost anyone if you look. You could argue that Rochester starts off as an asshat in Jane Eyre and ends up as the same asshat but with worse eyesight, and that would be true. Or you could say that he grew as a person by falling in love and acknowledging his twisted past, namely, oops, maybe it was weird of me to lock my crazy wife in the attic for years. You could argue that Tess in Tess of the D'Urbervilles starts and ends her life in misery, and all the things that happen to her are awful and don't stop her from being an innocent fool for eternity. Or you could say she fought her crappy fate in quiet, ultimately futile ways that nevertheless proved her resilience. You could argue that Harry Potter started off a brave little kid and ended up a brave young man, and we never doubted for a second that he'd get there. Or you could say you bit your nails the whole way and watched him grow with your heart in your throat. You could argue that people change or don't change, and you could probably make a pretty damn convincing case for both sides. You could argue that Mom didn't get a fair shot, stranded out in the woods with me for years. Or you could argue that she made a lot of her time here. So much of the house is shaped by her presence. Cross-stitched tapestries on the walls, knit blankets on the couches, furniture she whittled herself, and bowls and plates and spoons she made from porcelain, and flowers she planted that are perennials, which means they'll bloom for years and years and years, even now that she's gone. And so much of me is shaped by her presence, too. It sounds a bit morbid, but we buried Mom in the backyard where I buried Dorian Gray. She didn't die the night of the dance, or even the day after. She died about 2 weeks after that, and during those last weeks, Liz basically lived at the cabin with us. She and Auburn Stash were there the whole time, and when I kissed Mom goodbye through the gas mask, they were standing behind me, ready to catch me. But I didn't fall. I didn't. I have to live without a kickstand now. We even had a funeral. I wore a suit, and so did Auburn Stash and the rest. A few people showed up, actually, from Liz's family to the local state park guy, who cried so hard that I wonder whether he and Mom did more than play poker, to the mailman and Lucy from the pharmacy. I didn't want to talk to anyone, and we didn't make people check their phones at the door. It gave me an excuse not to approach people. That excuse might not always work. Because Auburn Stash talked to me about it one day while we were at her bedside and she couldn't open her eyes, and her breathing was sharp and short. Auburn Stash thinks what you do, that maybe there's a middle ground, and I'll have to focus, focus harder than any sci-fi laser beam. But maybe with his help, and in the hopes of meeting you, I can learn to put up with electricity. And all those electricities will learn to put up with me as well. So I wouldn't have a seizure or blow things up? Hopefully. And in the meantime, we could find something less awkward for you to wear in public. Forget that. You're saying I could watch a movie? Yes. And explore the interwebs? Yeah. And use a humidifier? All the humidifiers, Ollie. Snot ran down my face. Here I come, world, I said. As it is, I kind of just dart around the waves of color when I see them and make sure that if I start to sense a stronger aura, if I smell cinnamon or feel really dizzy or sneezy, I get the hell away. We were in the open backyard, in the long grass, so there were plenty of places to run to if I needed to. But I didn't. Junkyard Joe showed up in his wheelchair, but he couldn't go onto the grass. He waved at me from the porch. He could have been simulating ornithology again. I was scared to get close to him, what with his respirator, so perhaps that was for the best. He was a lot thinner than before. I didn't know what to say about it all, and maybe he felt the same way. Uncle Joe demanded to come, you know, Liz told me. We were walking down the driveway to where she parked her car. I was relieved to leave the murmuring guests behind. Said your mom's no trespassing signs gave him enough deer pelts over the years to reupholster every vehicle in his lot, and he owed her. He still talks about hunting? She rolled her eyes. Half the reason he tries so hard in physical therapy is so that he can climb right back up into a deer blind again. I told you, Ollie, he's a crackpot. The trees on either side of us seemed shorter than I remembered. I could see more of the sky than I'd ever appreciated above the driveway. So, look at you, she said. I've got a phone in my pocket and you aren't squealing like a girl. I had noticed the green glow of it through her jacket, over her heart. I never squealed like a girl. I squealed like a girly boy, thank you. She shoved me gently. Anyhow, girly, how long until you're ready to come to school? Everyone's still talking about the dance. It took them 2 days to sort out the generators. If I told them that 4-day weekend was your doing, all the kids would start singing your praises. I lifted my chin. I did my duty for school and country, but I don't think I'll be going back. Hey, never let your illness define you, she elbowed me. Give it time, Ollie. I swallowed. Yeah, that's what people say. But I'm going to do more than that, I think. She was kicking absent-mindedly at stones as she walked. Oh, how so? I'm going on a road trip with Auburn Stash. She stopped short, so that for once she was behind me. Whoa, what's with that face? She was frowning, strands of hair in her eyes, lines around her mouth. I just never considered that one day you might not be here. I choked on a laugh that wasn't really a laugh. Funny, I considered that every day. And then she ran forward, threw her arms around my neck, and pressed herself against my heart. And I could feel that phone in her jacket pocket buzzing against my chest, and I swear it made me gasp. Is that what you feel like all the time, Moritz? I'm coming with you, she said, breathless. Nope. I said, and shrugged her off. I turned around before she could see me cringe. I wanted to play it cool as a cucumber. I wanted to laugh it off, but my feet were heavy. We were almost at the power line. She followed behind me, trying to catch my eye, asking me to wait. I kept walking until she grabbed my jacket. Wait, damn it! Ollie, didn't you come to that dance to get me? Yeah, kind of. But that wasn't all of it. You went for your mom. I looked up at the trees. A big part of it was just standing up. Like I asked Moritz to do, like I'm going to do, taking this little vacation from here. I looked at the dead ends of the cable dangling overhead. As much as I love you to pieces, I think that's sometimes a problem. No offense, but you were right. I think I have to go figure myself out first, or something, before I can become the sort of person who asks what other people do on rainy days. I cleared my throat. Then I can come back all wise and handsome and dashing for you. I thought she would laugh, but she was obviously trying to wrap her mouth around something. So what, I could feel that old habit of hers, that ingrained need to be socially aware. Do you think you might be, romantically interested in him? Are you asking me whether I'm gay for Moritz? I would never say it like that. No, you wouldn't, I grinned. And no, I don't think so. If you don't know who I'm in love with by now, then I must be an unusually subtle person. She smiled a bit. You definitely aren't. But, have you read about Shakespearean love? What, you mean bromance? I blinked. Whoa. That word. It's wondrous. Is that a thing? An internet thing. I laughed. One day, I want to surf it. There, I admitted it. And so, why can't I come with you? Martin seems like a nice guy, the total bastard. She looked me dead in the eyes. Spit it all the way out, Ollie. You're awesome, Liz. Not because I say so, but because you are. What the hell are you running for? You're bigger than high school. The next time someone calls you trashy, you pull a Fika and punch them in the face. And then you can guilt yourself about it and learn some life lessons and get a bit tougher for it. What's a fee? Oh, never mind. She wrapped her arms around me once more, gently this time, and I swear she smelled like autumn and all the things I don't want to forget about when I leave Hermitopia. I'm going to miss you, doofus. Likewise, you know. She kissed me on the mouth, and it didn't suck this time. And she walked away, not into the woods, not with blackberries in her pockets, but still and always Liz. Auburn Stash helped me pack up my things the next day, although I got really annoyed when he told me I couldn't bring my anatomical model or all my graphic novels or the stag tapestry. Hey, I'm not used to not having those things around. I'll feel downright naked out in the real world, Moritz. I put my foot down when he tried to unpack my fishbowl and Glock. He's got a phone he keeps wrapped in a rubber poncho. He says he'll text your dad whatever address we end up at next. We're riding south to visit a kid in Ohio. From what I've read about Ohio, it's a state that grows lots of astronauts. Either that means Ohio is really damn cool, or it's exactly the kind of state you can't wait to get as far away from as possible. Either way, I'm pretty excited. How many of us are there, Auburn Stash? I asked while we loaded up his Impala. I'm so used to this womble now that I forget I'm wearing it. Us? You mean Freak Laboratory Spawn? Hey now, this isn't a comic book, Specimen 17. Ha, ha. As far as I know, there were 37, partial successes in the human enhancement program before the dissolution of the facility and the funding. Several are in Germany, others all around the world, in New Zealand and Taiwan and England. I visit the stateside ones on a regular rotation. Can we help them all? Help them do what? I don't know. I scratched the canvas at the back of my head. Deal with emotional teenage nonsense? See if any of them are worthy of comics? Nothing major. Auburn Stash's face crinkled up again, and he stilled his fidgeting for once. If you can find a way to deal with emotional nonsense, I need to come along for my own sake. And here I was hoping that emotional nonsense was something I could grow out of. Sorry, kiddo. Nope. I looked back at the triangular cabin in the woods as we reversed out of the garage. I looked back at the doorway where she wasn't standing, and I took a deep breath. I was glad that underneath the womble, I'd remembered to wear my coat. I'm writing this in the car. We've only been on the road for an hour, but I've seen fast food restaurants and semi-trucks and so many splatters of color that my head might metaphorically explode, and I think Mom would be happy about that, so long as I don't have to actually implode to see it all. It's several hours' drive from the Upper Peninsula all the way down to Ohio, but I'm not even a little bored. I could write so much to you. Should I write about the kid we're going to see first? The girl who stashes her heart in a lunchbox far away from her body so she doesn't have to feel things? Or about the one I want to visit afterward? A boy who can't heal any of his injuries, so he's as careful about moving around as he might be if he were made of glass and paper. But the kid I'm dying to meet is you. I want to tell you stories in person. And you know, maybe we're getting closer to that. Keep your chin up. Goggles off. One day, I'll see you in Kreitzig. With all my heart. Olly olly up and free.
This has been an Audible Studios production of Because You'll Never Meet Me, written by Leah Thomas, performed by Kirby Hayborn and Eric Michael Summerer. Producer, Mike Charzuk. Copyright 2015 by Leah Thomas. Production copyright 2015 by Audible Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.